you were not here, probably you have to bear with me somehow. You remember the two points which so far we discussed, and for the soul to grow and to develop and to become closer to Baha'u'llah, for the spirit of faith, when we talked about the spirit of faith, to grow day by day, so that our faith becomes stronger day by day, stronger, so that Baha'u'llah's words become fulfilled when he expects of us that our tomorrow is better than our today. And we pointed out one or two points that we could help ourselves, and this was the way that Baha'u'llah himself had shown us. We talked about the saying of obligatory prayers, the significance of it. We said how much that the saying of the obligatory prayer makes the soul humble. Really, when you read it carefully and in the presence of God, in the privacy of your own chamber, you read that and you see how humble we become. We become like that drop which I was mentioning yesterday, seeing the ocean. And then great powers can descend on the soul. And then when we read the writings of Baha'u'llah, and we talked about what the writings consisted of, so different from prayers, then great powers again will come. But that's not enough. You know, the story of religion is the story of love. When you say you are a Baha'i, you means that we are in love with Baha'u'llah. This is the meaning of it. It's a love story. It's not a story of knowledge. Forget about knowledge. Knowledge is a problem, quite frankly. And we probably talk about this. I'll make sure that I'll talk about this sometime today to you. But love. Love for God, love for Baha'u'llah. We are created to be the lovers. You know, this is the function of man, is to be a lover. And to the extent that we are a lover, to that extent we can enjoy life and we can enjoy living in accordance with the teachings. Now, to be a Baha'i means you are a lover of Baha'u'llah. And of course, loving is a relative term. It varies from person to person. We are at different levels here. When you love somebody, the sign of love, a real love, is that you are ready and willing and really longing to do what your beloved asks you to do. Isn't that right? This is a true love I'm talking about. I'm not talking of superficial love that we think somebody may think he has for somebody else. You know, the real love. When you have a real love, you don't want anything for yourself. You realize this? And if you ever want anything for yourself, it means that you are not in love with that person. Now, if you say, oh yes, I love this person because, oh, he's very rich and he's got the cars and houses and business, I love him. This is not love, this is selfishness, you see. But a real love is when you don't want anything for yourself, but you want everything for your beloved. Now, here we come to a very important point. When we become a Baha'i, and when we love Baha'u'llah, we want to do everything he has asked us to do, to carry out his teachings. And this is a very important point. If I say I love him but I don't carry out his teachings, then it means it's no use. I read the writings, what's the use of it? I say my prayers but I don't obey Baha'u'llah. You see how these things are related together? How one follows the other. You remember yesterday I was telling you it's something like you have to close all the switches which are in series, one after the other, and if one of them is opened, no current can go through. You have to close all the switches. Now this is it. We have to be willing and ready and joyous and longing to carry out his teachings. And his teachings is not purely, and his laws, the laws that he has given to us. Now in the Western world, we don't have many laws. Our laws are very few that Baha'u'llah has now given to us. The time will come in the future that we have to carry out more laws, which he has enjoined upon us. But the laws that he has given to us are so few. I mean, I will count them for you. We can count it with the fingers of your hand. Do you know what the first law of Baha'u'llah is, which we are asked to carry out? The most important of these laws? It's a law. And law has precedence over anything else. If there is a law, and if there is a teaching or a saying, the preference comes to the law of Baha'u'llah. I mentioned yesterday, if there was a choice between reading the writings of Baha'u'llah and saying the obligatory prayers, we say the obligatory prayers because it's the law of Baha'u'llah. Now, the first and the most important law of Baha'u'llah is the saying of obligatory prayers and fasting. It's required of us. And he mentions, Abdul Baha also mentions, that if we do not do that, we will not be able to get close to him. There is a barrier already. And we have to make this a habit. Let us, all of us here, as our chairman was saying, really determine and try it. I would suggest, and this is of course, I'm mentioning this to the new Baha'is, because the older Baha'is are familiar with this. But I'm mentioning this to newer Baha'is. Let us try this for 3 months. Do it regularly. And regularly read the writings, and then you forget about it. Just remember it for 3 months. That's enough. Then forget about it. All will work out then. You will find it becomes a beautiful picture. You try it. You try it and see how one's life will change. Now, yes, we must, just reading the laws of Baha'u'llah, I was talking about, the fasting, obligatory prayers, the law of marriage, Baha'i marriage, I'm sure you're all familiar with. The law of prohibition of the drinking of alcohol is one of the laws of Baha'u'llah, which is binding on us. It is time that now, in the Western world, we are able, as Baha'is, and especially the young Baha'is, to stand erect, well-oriented, strong people who will stand up in the public and say, I will not drink because Baha'u'llah has forbidden it. And the same thing applies to the taking of drugs. These are the things we have to be frank with people who become Baha'is. And tell them this. They have every right to know this. And then it is the other one is the question of sexual relations outside marriage. It's forbidden by Baha'u'llah. Outside marriage. Before and after. Marriage he has enjoined upon us. And it is not compulsory, but it's a marvelous thing. When I was about 10 or 12 years ago in Ireland, we had about 150, 200 people became Baha'is in one town. Young people. Young men and young women. They became beautiful Baha'is. Strong Baha'is, and they all scattered. We asked them to scatter throughout the country, and now they are the people who have built up the foundations of a new, of all the communities we have there. We have now in the south of Ireland 20 local assemblies, and these people have become the foundations of these assemblies. They have pioneered, and they've all of them spread around, and they live recognizing our impotence and our utter nothingness and our humility. Then you have the makings of a spiritual giant. servitude, you see, is the greatest station that God has destined for man. There is no greater station than the station of servitude for man. In fact, there are three stations, he says, in the world. The station of God, which is above us. The station of the manifestations of God, which is above us. And the station of man is that of servitude. Servitude. And Abdul Baha was the true servant. No person on this earth will ever reach him as low as that in servitude. Because when you go in servitude, you go down, further down, not up. You cannot be a servant and have ambition to become somebody. There is no station for anybody in this faith. And this is a great protection for all of us. If you want to think of a station for somebody, servitude. To be low, to be... Abdul Baha says, make me a dust in the path of thy loved ones. This is true. A dust in the path of loved ones. If ever somebody thinks of saying I, this is a very bad word to use, I. Or my. It's really a bad word. It's the word which has caused all the troubles in the world. But utter nothingness. Come to us when we see the great ocean of revelation of Baha'u'llah. You cannot artificially become humble. And humility come only to us when we see the greatness of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. Now Abdul Baha became that embodiment of servitude. And he himself begged Baha'u'llah to give him that station when he was a child. When Abdul Baha was a child of about 10 years of age in Baghdad, he had recognized the station of his father. And I mentioned that he recognized it, really recognized who he was. We haven't recognized him. We cannot recognize him. We can only recognize him to a limited degree. Abdul Baha's recognition and the recognition of the Bab as to the station of Baha'u'llah was so complete that it is beyond us. You know that often people think that because Abdul Baha was the son of Baha'u'llah, well, you know how it is between the father and the son. There is always an intimate relationship of intimacy there is no conventions there. You know, at home when you're alone, you're just very, very relaxed and absolutely free, and there is no restrictions. You're a member of a family, and this is your father, and this is the son, and who knows what the sons these days do to their fathers, and vice versa. But anyhow, we have a very, very intimate relationship. And some people may think that Abdul Baha had the same relationship with his father. But he didn't. Although there was this love between them, naturally. But Abdul Baha had so recognized the station of Baha'u'llah as being the Lord of Lords, as being the manifestation, the supreme manifestation of God, that he considered himself as his humblest servant. He would never, in the ordinary time when everybody was out of the house, he would never give himself the liberty of suddenly walking into the room of Baha'u'llah. He would not go in without getting permission, without prostrating himself at his feet. You see, he had recognized him who he was. It wasn't his heavenly, it wasn't his earthly father. It was God revealed to man. He had recognized that. We haven't recognized it. And therefore he knew what humility meant towards his father. You have heard many stories of Abdul Baha approaching the house in which his father was living, for instance, in the mansion of Bahji. When Abdul Baha was in Akka and he was in the Bahji, you have heard of that story, I'm sure many of you. He used to ride his donkey to go from Akka to the mansion of Bahji. But as soon as he saw the mansion from distance, he would dismount from his donkey. Because it is in the conventions of the East, and one of the signs of respect towards your Lord, if you are a servant of somebody, you never go riding to your servant. You must to your Lord. If you are a servant, you never ride to go to see your Lord. You always walk. And so Abdul Baha would dismount from his donkey as a respect towards, just as soon as he saw from 1 mile distance the mansion of Bahji, he would dismount. He would walk. He said he would never go riding to his Lord. And then Baha'u'llah, what a love he had towards Abdu'l-Bahá. The outpouring of love and adoration that he had for him was something again out of this world. He often, when he would hear that Abdu'l-Bahá is coming to the mansion of Bahji, for example, as soon as he would hear, he would make the whole household and everyone who was around there to be vigilant to see when the master is arriving from distance, and he would send all the men who were there, every person, to go as a welcoming party a mile or two ahead. The master is coming, he said. And he himself would stand on the balcony watching, waiting for the master to come. And those who were with him, usually the female members of the household or some of the disciples who were there, women disciples and who were in that household, he would look to them and say, look at the master. Look at the way he walks. Look at his majesty. Look at his powers. You see? Now this is a love relationship between the two. But one is the Lord and one is the servant. Now one, Baha'u'llah, you can consider him like a summit of a lofty mountain. And Abdu'l-Bahá, the lowest servant, the lowest valley. The lowest valley. No one can reach him as low as that. The lowest valley down there. And then when the water pours down from the top of the mountain, where does it accumulate? It accumulates in the lowest valley. And this is how Abdu'l-Bahá, you see, one of the distinguishing features of this revelation, and this you have all studied, the covenant, one of the distinguishing features of this revelation is that Baha'u'llah has brought his revelation for us. But unlike the prophets of the past, he never gave it to us. He brought it for us, but he didn't give it to us, his revelation. He gave them to Abdu'l-Bahá. This is the meaning of the covenant. All the forces of the revelation of Baha'u'llah, all the forces that he released for 40 years of his ministry, he poured it within the person of Abdu'l-Bahá. Abdu'l-Bahá became the reservoir of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. It's like this glass in here. This glass contains all the water that is therein. See? Abdu'l-Bahá became a container. Baha'u'llah had brought for us two things in this dispensation, and not more and not less. One was the great, one was his revelation, and one was the person of Abdu'l-Bahá. And these two things is all that God has given to mankind in this age. And Abdu'l-Bahá became here like a container of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. And although he did not have the powers, although he was not a manifestation of God, he had the powers of the manifestation of God conferred upon him by virtue of containing all that revelation within him. And so what did Baha'u'llah tell us? He says to us this. This is his message. This is the gist of the covenant. He says, everything I have brought for you is with Abdu'l-Bahá. Go and get it from him. It is nowhere else. Outside Abdu'l-Bahá, nothing exists. It's within him. This is the meaning of the covenant. So you see, because he really received the revelation of Baha'u'llah on behalf of all humanity and held it there and protected it, just like a wall that you put around an ocean. And it was an ocean of revelation. And that wall, many people tried to break through. The covenant breakers, during his ministry. You should study that turbulent history of the faith during those 29 years. They tried to break through this great wall of this ocean and to get to this water of life. But Abdu'l-Bahá and a few of the believers who rallied around him like lions, they protected this covenant, this cause. And so they couldn't break through. And today, of course, it's a different story. That wall of the covenant is so strong that it'll be foolish to think anybody can even think in terms of breaking through it. It's a tremendous revelation, really. And Abdu'l-Bahá and Baha'u'llah here have this reciprocal goal of one complementing the other, bringing to us the revelation of Baha'u'llah. Well, friends, I think we should take a break here, and then I will probably remember some of the things that I have forgotten. We will see. Do you think we can start again?